The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
All right, this is a session on asking effective questions. You should have a handout coming out, and I'll be talking about things that are on the overhead here. What we want to talk about, first of all, is some purposes for asking questions. Why do we ask questions? One of the reasons is to get children involved in the subject we're studying. Unless the child's mind is in gear, they're not learning. It doesn't do any good to stand and talk to the class or even to have them just read something if the material just goes in. You know that if you take food in your mouth and don't chew it, it doesn't do you any good. And so one of the things we do as we ask questions is ask them in a way to get children to think. Secondly, as you ask a question, especially an individual student, sometimes you can tell their level of understanding. They show what they understand or what they don't understand by the way they answer the question. And so then you, as a teacher, know what you need to do from there on, whether they're ready to move on or not. Two more reasons would be to help them remember, to fix facts in the mind. Sometimes you review something, simply review at the end of a lesson, at the end of a class, and help them to remember. Or maybe at the beginning of a class, review what you talked about the class before that. Also, number four, help the students realize that it's their class. Get them thinking together. It's something that we do as a group. Sometimes we actually don't know something. Something comes up in a class and you wonder, what's the population of Australia, or how do you pronounce a certain word, or whether a certain word is capitalized, and nobody knows, including the teacher. And so you can assign a student to look this up, find out, check it out. And as you go on with the class discussion, somebody can look it up, and then they come back and you call on them after they have it looked up and give you the answer. When you do that, it also helps to show children that when you don't know something, you do find out. The teacher doesn't know everything, and it does teach children to check things out, find things out if they don't know. The next two are to either introduce a story or a lesson. Sometimes before you begin a story or begin a new lesson, giving a question for the child to think about before you even read the story. For example, some of you were in a workshop I had this morning, which involved some pioneer people and poverty, and you could give them a question before they begin. Do you suppose it would be possible to prepare 10 acres of soil with one horse? What are some of the challenges that people would face if they had to live in a frontier region? And then sometimes after a story has been read, after a selection has been read, following up the reading with an application question. And we'll see a bit later some of these in actual work. I have another handout to give you with some samples here. Again, we can check comprehension as something is read together. As you're reading something, maybe reading through a story, stop, ask a few questions, and as you ask a question to one person, another person, for example, you might ask, why do you think this person asked that question? What do you think he's going to do next? What's he really planning to do next? And some students might have no idea. They say, I don't know. But over here is a student who does have an idea, and he says, well, I think he's going to try to find his way out of there. And as students hear each other answer questions, in a way, they learn how other people think. And sometimes you learn a little bit like watching somebody mix up a recipe, make something, you see how they do it. In a way, you can learn how other people think as you hear them answer questions. And also, sometimes you can ask a question to require someone to express an opinion. When you have an opinion, it's based on some information. For example, which is the best way to travel from here to maybe someplace 20 miles away. If you're going to travel, you could take a highway, but it's 20 miles further. You could take the local road or the provincial road that's more direct, but goes through several towns. Now, that calls for an opinion. One person might say take the highway because it's safer, there's not any cross traffic, and even though it's a little further, you'll get better gas mileage, or better gas kilometer-wise. And the other person might say, well, go through town because it is in fact closer, it isn't as boring as driving on the highway, and maybe you can stop along the way and purchase something. Now, the children need to think, they should learn to think. Thinking is hard work. And there are many things in life in which we have to make a decision how we're going to do this or that, and you should be able to give some reasons why you think this way or why you think that way. And sometimes children will just say, well, that's the way I prefer. And they don't want to do the work of actually thinking through something. So they can have the experience of having reasons for what they decide. The last two in this section are to clarify a situation, a topic, or a problem. What is really going on here? What's this person trying to accomplish? Why is he doing that? And last of all, to keep the class involved. Sometimes you see a mind wandering and you direct a question to someone and keeps him on task, keeps her on task. Don't just ask questions to keep people's attention. They'll soon catch on whether you're just asking a question because they're ready to whisper to a neighbor, but it is a way of keeping people involved. Next, I'd like to look at some kinds of questions. First, we looked at some good reasons for asking questions. Now, what about some types of questions? The first couple here, a rhetorical question is one that you ask that you don't really expect anybody to answer out loud. So, for example, instead of saying a statement like, we have all experienced jealousy at some time in our lives, you could say, is there any one of us who has not experienced jealousy? Is there anyone who has not felt like staying in bed when you should get up? It's a way of having people think where you put it in question form. An application question is the kind of thing a teacher should be alert to ask when you can, and I'll show you some later, where you somehow tie what you're reading about in class to something outside of school. Children, unless the teacher does that for the child, children are very good at keeping school things inside the walls of school and thinking that what they learn in school doesn't have much to do with real life outside of school. And so you think of questions that would connect this to life outside of class. For example, if you're studying where drilling wells or the water table, for example, or how you get water in the house, you could ask them, well, where do you get the water in your house? They may never have thought about such a thing. Going to a leading question is one in which you lead the student right over the answer. If you just asked, is this person here, what character quality is this person showing in the story? You might not get any response. On the other hand, if you ask, is this showing greed or is it showing ambition? Well, now it's one of those two. Or you could even be direct and say, this person is acting greedy, isn't he? And all they have to do then is decide whether or not that's correct. You've kind of led them right over the answer. And for a person who draws a blank, doesn't know, sometimes a leading question helps them. A practical question is simply one that asks, how do we do this problem? Where do we find this answer? What reference tool will we use? Will we use an encyclopedia, a almanac, a dictionary? What kind of tool would you use to solve this problem? How will we construct this paragraph? Is this going to be a narrative paragraph, or will it be a persuasive paragraph? Comprehension questions. Simply, who came? What's happening here? Recall questions are easy to ask and easy to answer, but they do have their place, because if you don't know the material, you're not ready to work with it. And so sometimes if you read something and you want to have a discussion about it, a few recall questions first help you to discern, do the people actually know the story? Have they read the material? And if they haven't read it or don't remember, you can't really do much with it. Inferential. An inferential question is often called reading between the lines. Children need to learn to do this. And so if you go for a walk on a hot July day, and you ask what season was this? And the person says, I don't know what season it was. It doesn't tell you. Well, no, it doesn't. But you're supposed to think. And if you know that July is in the summer, and the story says July, you should be able to infer that this was also in the summer. An evaluated question asks the student to compare, to judge something by some standard. Was this good? Was it proper? Was it right? Was it convincing? A personal question is one that calls for the student to somehow share something out of his own life experience. And so, if you're studying animals, has anyone ever seen an elephant? Have you ever been to seen Niagara Falls? Have you been here? Have you done that? Have you seen a hot air balloon? And so on. Children often like to share things from their own lives, and it contributes something to the class if they can do that. Be careful in asking personal questions, though, that you don't ask something embarrassing. If you are teaching younger children hygiene and tell them you should brush your teeth, well, if you ask, is there anybody who didn't brush your teeth today? Well, that's quite different, where you put them in an embarrassing situation. And the stimulating questions. Stimulating questions is just simply something that pops into your mind that makes you wonder, that you might think about. I think a stimulating question would be one like this. Down our way, there are some railroad tracks. They torn up. They no longer use them for railroads, but instead they made hiking trails out of them, or biking trails. Do they have any of those around here? Well, I don't think anybody in the 1940s or 1950s would have had any idea that the railroads would become hiking trails. And I'm wondering when they will be converting our four-lane interstate highways down the states, when they'll convert them to hiking trails. And I'm wondering what would have to happen to our economy in order for that to happen. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that would happen sometime. I think that's kind of a stimulating thing to think about. Well, oblique or hidden questions. Sometimes there's a question hidden inside a question. When the Sadducees came to Jesus and asked him questions about whose wife will this be in heaven, they didn't really want to know that. They really wanted to trip him up. Sometimes there's a question behind the question. A spontaneous question is one that just pops into your mind. Maybe you didn't plan it. Maybe you never asked it before. But sometimes it's called the teachable moment. As you're talking about something, something comes up and you ask a question that pops into your mind. And then the discovery question or analysis. How do we do this? Step by step. Sometimes a student has trouble solving a math problem, for example, and you ask him, well, what did you do so far? What numbers are we going to need for this? What don't we need? Is this an addition problem, a subtraction problem? And you help the person to think through, or the person is trying to look something up and they say they can't find it, and you say, well, what does it say at the top of the page here? Well, it says index. And what are you trying to find? I'm trying to find the definition of the word. Well, do you find definitions in an index? Well, I'm not sure. Well, look at this section over here. This is called glossary. Is there a difference between a glossary and an index? And so as you lead them through that, you help them to think something through rather than just simply telling them. Sometimes questions are divided into two categories, convergent and divergent. A convergent question is simply a question that has a correct answer. And so what figure has four sides, all the same length, and all right angles? And so there's a particular answer. There's an answer key for that. And many of our questions are like that. But then occasionally, we should also ask divergent questions. They are questions that have more than one reasonable answer. There's more than one way to do it. And many of the challenges we face in life call for us to think that way. There's more than one way to do some things. What are 20 things that you could use a coat hanger for, 20 useful things for a coat hanger? Or what are some ways to, like I have here, how could you show a person who doesn't speak your language that you are friendly? What do you suppose some ways would be to do that? And children could share ideas and they could agree or disagree. How could we do this another way? How might it be different? And so on. Make some interesting discussions sometimes. One time we were, some years ago, I'm not sure right what led up to it, but we were talking about useful things to carry with you, and somehow what it led up to was coming up with a list of useful things for a girl to carry in her purse. These were grades, 7th and 8th graders, and they kind of took the challenge and they came up with a list of 110 things that would be useful to carry in the purse. And so then some of them thought it would be a good idea to see if they could actually get these together and get them in the purse. And so they did that and brought a purse into school with 110 or whatever it was things in it, and then laid them out on the table for display. And they were very reasonable things. It's something that all of you, I hope, carry a Band-Aid in your purse. You never know when you'll need one. Things like a Band-Aid or a rubber band or a postage stamp or a little mirror, those things don't take up much space, but they're all useful. And of course, you can debate on what things are useful and what things are not useful. But there are plenty of opportunities to, in fact, as you get out of school and you live your life, you'll have many times that you have to think this way. What is a good way to do this? How's the way we can solve this problem? How can we stop this leak? How can we get the PA system to work? And so on. Sometimes there's no answer key for it, and you have to adapt and try a different mic. As you ask questions, some guidelines, remember that it can be very intimidating to children to be asked a question. Here they are sitting in the class. Teacher directs a question, says, "Susie," and immediately the attention of the class is focused on Susie, and she's supposed to answer the question. Well, suppose she doesn't know. She can be nervous, embarrassed. So just remember, as a teacher, that yes, the child can be nervous. Don't be overbearing. Don't be condescending. Don't ask questions that are too simple. Sometimes students don't respond because they feel insulted because you ask them too simple a question. Occasionally, fit the question to the person. Some people can handle a more difficult question than others. Sometimes you know a particular student who maybe has done something or been somewhere, and you know that person could contribute something to the class because of that. And so be alert to particular individuals who could share something in a discussion that different from what other people can. Sometimes you can actually plan ahead to what can be put in question form. As you look at a lesson coming up, a story coming up, you can think of a particular question that would be good. And I'm thinking right now of a biography called Amos Fortune. Amos Fortune, Free Man. And in that biography, it's about a young man who was brought from Africa to Vermont years ago and sold into slavery. And there are some chapters in there that provide excellent discussion material for things like freedom and what it means to be free and what it means to live under oppression. Sometimes you can give a question ahead of time and have the students think about it, and sometimes that one question provides enough material for a whole discussion in a devotional time or a class period. Use questions to generate discussion and direct questions to the whole class first. As soon as you say a particular student's name, especially if you say their name before you ask the question, other students will often tune out what you say. And as soon as you say Jack, well, everyone else can relax because they know this. And so instead, direct it to everybody first and then give them some time to think. Now, remember the kind of question you ask. Some questions take more thinking than other ones do. If it's simply a recall question, who arrived first, they either know or they don't know it, and so you should be able to answer pretty promptly. But on the other hand, if you ask, the bridge was out, so what are some ways they could have gotten across the stream instead of just waiting? What might they have done? If you want them to think like that, give them some time to think. And don't take, as soon as one hand goes up, don't immediately have that person respond, because you want them all to think. And then when they do start giving answers, why call for several answers before you move on? That involves more people and allows everybody to be involved. And also, be sure they understand the question. Nothing quite so embarrassing as having students think, or at least you think they're thinking, and then you ask somebody, all right, what do you have to say? And the person says, what was the question? And you realize that all this time was wasted because they didn't really know the question. So be sure they understand the question. And sometimes when you give them time to think, you have to remind them, now I know that you're all thinking. And they should be thinking about an answer, not just sitting there waiting. A student should never feel embarrassed by an answer that he or she gives. The classroom should be a safe, secure place. And if you don't know something, it's safe to ask. And if you do answer a question and it's not the correct answer, sometimes you can say, well, that's a thoughtful answer, but actually it answers this question. And then you could state the question that it does answer, but our question was this one, and then you could move on. Sometimes students ask questions that are off the subject, that are unnecessary. Sometimes they're good questions, but they don't fit the subject. And so you could say, well, ask me that at lunchtime or some other time. We'll talk about that another time. Here's another one. Sometimes you can assign students to ask questions the next day based on the assignment. Have them read a story, read a section, or maybe in devotions time. Say, tomorrow I want you to come with some questions. I want you to come with three questions to ask, either to ask for the class, or if you want an interesting challenge, why you could say tomorrow there will be a quiz on this selection, and you will ask the questions, and you will ask me the questions as the teacher. So you each come up with three questions, and when class time comes tomorrow, why you ask me? And of course, that would be a challenging experience to open yourself up to. You wouldn't necessarily know all the answers, but it kind of turns things around and has them thinking about the assignment in a different way. Beware of questions that have no challenge. And also, beware of asking too many rhetorical questions. I've heard teachers already go on and on saying something like, do you see the picture at the top of the page? Do you notice that the people there are working under great hardship? Do you see the chart on the bottom of the page? Do you notice that it has a graph that shows you both the speed and the time? And they go on and on. Do you see this? Do you see that? Well, what are the students supposed to do? They soon learn that the teacher's just kind of talking to himself up there, and they can just sit there and listen while the teacher talks. So don't do too many of those rhetorical questions. And number 12, I alluded to before, invite students to come to class with a question. Number 13, also I referred to a bit before, when a student asks a question, asks for help, why then prompt them to think through. Sometimes give students a question to think about overnight. You can ask them to go home and ask their parents, think about this, and ask maybe suggestions or something that comes up in class. And it's hard to plan for that, but sometimes something comes up and it's a good thing for them to have their get their parents in on it. Maybe it's you're studying history, maybe more recent history, something that the parents might remember. And you could tell them to ask their parents what it was like experiencing this thing that happened in the ancient times of 1970 or 1960 or something like that. All right, as you word your questions, be clear and specific and rather than something general, like tell about this or tell about that, you can say something like explain how, or explain this, or explain that. Avoid simple yes-no questions. They actually encourage guessing. A student has a 50% chance of guessing correctly if it's a simple yes-no question. Also, watch out for questions that really don't require the student to give an answer. If I ask you, can you tell why light is needed for plants to grow? Think about that question. You can say, if you say no, all you're doing is saying, I can't tell you why. If you say yes, then all you're doing is saying, yes, I can tell you why. And so that hasn't really served much of a purpose. So then I'd have to follow up and say, well, okay, then tell me. So I might as well have said in the first place, tell me why light is needed for plants to grow. Also, avoid simple two-choice questions listed from the book. Children are very skilled at listening to the teacher's tone of voice and figuring out what the correct answer is without really knowing the subject. So if I say, for example, was Napoleon the emperor of France or of England? Well, you learn, after I do that a few times, that probably the correct answer is France. And so you say France, and I say, good. And you know, some teachers are unaware of how they do that, but sometimes the way you ask the question itself, and the student is really analyzing the way you ask the question rather than thinking about the subject at hand. And they're very skilled at that. Also, of course, that's similar to looking at flashcards and recognizing the little bend or little mark on the flashcard and going by that rather than the information on the flashcard. And my last one here is to train children to listen to all questions and answers in class. The purpose of questions is to learn something, and they're supposed to listen to all of them. It's not unusual if I would ask a question to, if I'd ask a question such as, why weren't they able to get across the stream, and ask Lisa, and she says the bridge was out. And I ask someone else over here, why couldn't they do it? Now, it might not be a question that simple. If your students are like my students, it wouldn't be unusual for the second person to say, oh, I don't know. And now the question was just answered. And so if the question was just asked and answered, everybody should know the answer, right? Well, sometimes you ask Bob over here and he doesn't know. Well, you just come right back to Lisa and say, why couldn't they get across? And she says, the bridge was out. And you go back to Bob and say, now, why couldn't they? And sometimes the second time, he still won't know. And so you just ask someone else. And sooner or later, he'll catch on that he actually should be listening. And when this person over answers something, he should know. You really need to train your students to listen to everything that's said in class, if there is a class discussion. After all, we're supposed to be learning something. This isn't just to have a monologue with one or two people. What I'd like to do now, I have another sheet to hand out. And this other one has some selections, some short selections with some questions. And I'll talk about these a bit with you. What this really shows us is some samples of varieties of questions that can be asked on some particular pieces of reading. Since we haven't had opportunity to read these like you would have if I had assigned them to you, I'll go ahead and just read aloud the first section of the first one here, taken from the seventh grade or sixth grade social studies book, God's World, His Story. The first part goes like this. Why not the Romans? Don't pay those high taxes. Freedom or die. Cries like these were probably very common in the Jerusalem of Jesus' day. Most Jews hated the Romans. They were tired of Roman taxes and Roman armies. Yet, in those days, Jerusalem was a city of prosperity. There were plenty of jobs and plenty to eat. The Jews lived in peace, except when they stirred the anger of their Roman rulers. The Jews were the only Roman subjects who did not have to send men into the army. Jews all over the empire refused to take up arms on the Sabbath or worship the emperor as God. Unwillingly at times, The Romans made numerous laws to exempt Jews from the army and other things their religion forbade. Jews in the Roman Empire did not know how good they had it until the Great Revolt of 64 to 70. After Christ ascended into heaven, the bitterness between the Jews and Romans continued to grow worse. The Jews began their fight to get rid of the Romans in AD 64. The rebels drove the Romans out of Jerusalem, but the Romans refused to give up their claim on the city. 6 years of war followed. That's as far as I go. Now, what I want you to notice here is some kinds of questions that you can ask. The thought here is not, these aren't necessarily questions that you will give as a homework assignment, but if you are talking about a selection that children have read, whether it's a story or a selection, the kinds of questions you try to ask thinking on your feet, more or less. Be alert to terms. For example, what are taxes? Sixth graders, seventh graders, do they know what taxes are? What concept do children have about taxes? And so it would be interesting to ask your children, what are taxes? Well, they might say something that dad has to pay or something our parents complain about. I'm not sure what they'd say. Well, this provides a little teachable moment. Well, you could lead them into thinking, now, out in front of the school here is a road. Who do you think pays for that road? It takes some money to build the road. It takes money to keep the road up. It takes money to plow the snow. Who do you think pays for that? Well, and then that would lead into the fact that tax money pays for that. Now, are people glad for things that tax money provides for them? Well, do we like to have roads? Are we glad for roads? Well, they would probably say yes. And then you could ask them, well then, why would anybody ever complain about taxes if you like things that taxes provide for? And of course, that leads them into thinking, well, maybe there's too much of something. Maybe the government's going to build something I don't want to use, so I shouldn't have to pay for it. And then what are high taxes? It said, don't pay those high taxes. What are high taxes? Then another one, why did most Jews hate the Romans? What about that? Somebody want to offer an answer for there? Based on what it says here, why did most Jews hate the Romans? What reasons are in the text? Anybody? Yes?
They were tired of Roman taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it gives another reason too.
The Roman
armies and Roman taxes. Right. There's you can answer that from the text there. Look at number 5. What three elements of prosperity are named in paragraph 2? Paragraph 2 points out some examples of prosperity. What are some? Just call them out. Anybody?
Jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, jobs. Food. All right, and also peace. Now, I talked about application questions, bringing something from something you read to today. What elements of prosperity? Are we prosperous? Are we prosperous today? Well, you can look at those elements. Is there peace? Do your students recognize that peace is a form of prosperity? And jobs, food, and so on. Do students ever think about the fact that they are wealthy? When they think of wealth, they might just think of money and say, well, I don't have much money. Well, what do you have? Many things that you do have. And look out for terms. Number 6, what exemptions did the Romans give the Jews? Something like exemption is a rather difficult concept to get a hold of, but right here, it's in here. What exemption did the Jews have? Anybody? Yes, they didn't have to take part in the army. They didn't have to work as soldiers. Right there in the text itself, it defines a term. And so you can go on, and let's go to a different kind of selection. The next selection is based on two paragraphs taken from one of the Pathway readers called Living Together. And I'll just take time to read this one aloud. I wasn't very big when I first opened my eyes. In fact, I was so tiny and weak that about all I could do was to stretch my neck and look up into the leaves about me. It wasn't much for scenery, just the leaves and the little patches of the blue summer sky that showed here and there. I was alone in my nest, except for the pure white egg from which my sister would hatch 3 days later. Perhaps you'd think there was plenty of room for me to move around, for the egg was only the size of a navy bean. But don't forget that my nest wasn't very big, just smaller than half a walnut shell. Now, here are just two paragraphs. Children of a very young age can be asked some real thinking questions. I wouldn't suggest that you try to come up with 20 questions in every two paragraphs that you read. But this is simply to illustrate that you can. This was a group of teachers worked on this and came up with a list of these 20 questions. But let's just look at a few of them. Has he grown since the time he opened his eyes? Can you tell from sentence number one? I wasn't very big when I first opened my eyes. Well, yes, based on that sentence, he has grown since. Younger children can answer that he opened his eyes. Does that mean he was sleeping? And you can just imagine some chuckles with some children there. Some didn't even think about it, and it's a new thought to them to even consider whether this bird was sleeping or not. But somebody will be glad to say no, well, he was just worn. And then some child might come up with another question and say, well, I wonder if they have their eyes open when they're inside an egg. What is the season? What about that? What season is this taking place in? Yes?
Summer.
It's summer, and how do you know?
The passage of the blue summer sky.
Right, blue summer sky. Now, my second question there showed that some children can read something and know the answer, but if you ask them to point to the place in the text that gives you that answer, it's hard for them to do it. They say, I know it's in there, but they should actually be able to go and say, right here it says blue summer sky, so it had to be summer. And what color are the leaves? Yes. Green, and where does it say that? It doesn't say that, does it? All right, this calls for a different kind of thinking, and children should be able to think that way. You might, with a younger child, they might say, well, it doesn't say. Well, no, it doesn't, but it's summer, and you should be able to make the inference. And then there are questions like, how big is a navy bean? Well, the text doesn't say, and there's where it calls for somebody in the class might have an idea how big a navy bean is. If you don't know how big a navy bean is, you don't know what to compare this to. But there you're calling for something outside the class for them to bring that in and compare it to something in class. Let's go to the next selection. This is about Isaac and his men back in the days when they were living over in Palestine. And you recall how they filled his wells a number of times. He lived there, and the people filled up his wells, and they dug them, and then they filled them, and finally they let him go. Well, it opens up by saying, the people in the land where Isaac lived saw that Isaac was rich. Now, this is taken from a rather low reader, I think maybe second grade or third. And be alert to asking questions like this. How did the people of the land see that Isaac was rich? It says they saw it. Did he wear a sign on him that said, I am wealthy? Well, they should be able to put into words things like he owned many cattle. He had a lot of servants. And sometimes ask a question if they say, we had many cattle, he had servants. And sometimes you make, don't overdo this, but sometimes you make the connection, are we rich? And how did Isaac get his wealth? What does it mean to inherit something when you come across a word or a concept like that? Be alert to teaching a term like that in the midst of a text. Number five, how serious was the problem of the filled wells? There they were with cattle, and somebody filled up the wells. Now, how soon would they have to do something about that? Could they wait a month? Could they wait a week? Thinking about that, well, how long can you go without water? Would they have to do something in a matter of hours here? This was a serious problem. And number six is an example of an application question or connection from something you read at school to something in your life. So here we're talking about wells and getting water and wells being filled. And you can ask, how do you get water at your house? And many children have no idea. Well, it comes out of the faucet. are out of the picture. But how does it get there? And, you know, some might know, some might not. You say, well, find out. Tomorrow I'll ask you again. And that gives them a chance to go home and ask Dad, where did we get the water in our house? And he can go down and show them where it comes into the basement, or they have a well, or they have a pump. And sometimes, this, you don't need to make a big deal of this, but sometimes things just pop into your mind as a teacher. You throw out a question, and children actually learn something about life outside of school just because you ask a simple question. All right, Isaac, why did Isaac move to a new place? What would many people have done instead of moving? Well, this isn't hard to know. What would they have done?
They would fight.
They would fight, right. Right. When Isaac's wells were filled, he didn't quarrel. What is a quarrel? That needs a little more vocabulary. There's arguments, and then there are quarrels. Are they the same thing? Are they a little bit different? Look for opportunities to point out the little differences between synonyms. They aren't exactly the same thing. Let's go to the last one. This is a story we won't take time to read, but it's a story about a boy who, I'll just read the first paragraph. All day long, the little boy had worked hard in field, in barn, and shed, for his people were poor farmers and could not pay a workman. But at sunset time, there came an hour that was all his own, for his father had given it to him. Then the boy would go up to the top of the hill and look across at another hill that rose some miles away. On this far hill stood a house with windows of clear gold and diamonds. They shone and blazed so that it made the boy wink to look at them. After a while, the people in the house put up its shutters, as it seemed, and then it looked like any common farmhouse. The boy supposed they did this because it was supper time, and then he would go into the house and have a supper of bread and milk and so to bed. Now, is anybody familiar with this story, by the way? All right, he looks across the valley and sees this house with golden windows, and one time he had the opportunity to actually travel across the valley to this place, met the people, and found out it was a house just like any other house. But when he looked back across the valley to his own house, he noticed that his own house had golden windows. And then when he came back home that evening, why, look at the very end. Have you had a good day? Asked his mother. Yes, the boy had had a very good day. Have you learned anything? Asked his father. Yes, said the boy. I have learned that our house has windows of gold and diamond. Now, an interesting story, in order to get, for children to get more value out of something, you want to stimulate them with some questions, to chew this, to digest it. And so, you could ask questions like reading comprehension questions. What are some jobs you think the boy did every day? If the boy's parents had more money, what might they have done? What trouble does the boy have in looking at the windows? Now, also you can ask questions that are more stimulating for appreciation, what I call here literary appreciation. What made the little boy's evenings special? Or find well-written paragraphs and read it aloud. How does distance affect the things we see? Do you know, after reading this story, some rather young children could answer that question. That when you look at something from a distance, it might look more special than when you look at it up close. And number five, do you have a hill where you like to sit? Now, after reading this story, some children could respond to that, and they might get what you mean by the question. They might say, yes, I like to go out sometimes on the summer evening and sit back beside the doghouse. The dog comes out beside me, and he pants, and I scratch him behind the ears and look at the stars. And then someone else might get the idea, say, well, I like to curl up in a chair and read a good book, and so on. And one more, number four, how does this story make the lives of these common people special? The people really had very routine, common lives, but as we read this story, we realize that their lives were really very special, and then you can make a connection. Are our lives special? Our lives that seem very routine and everyday, maybe they're special too. And so, as we see here, the purpose of the second sheet I gave you is for you to Compare the selection that's here with the questions and notice that there is a variety of kinds of questions. You don't always ask all these questions with everything you read. You don't want to talk everything to death. The students would get tired of it. But as you ask questions, be thinking of different kinds of questions to ask. And there are questions that are stimulating, there are questions that are challenging, there are questions that have students make connections with what they read and life outside of school, questions that make them ponder, think, and so on. And think of the way Jesus asked and answered questions. When Jesus asked a question, he had a purpose, and as people answered it, it made them think and grow.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.